my hand in your mouth and take my picture with you.
Whoa, baby, whoa. Don't bite Papa. No, no. Cleveland's.
All right, folks, it is another Muskie 360 podcast.
Oh, man.
What are you doing, Guru?
Dude, I am just chilling on a cheetah bean bag. How about you?
Cheetah bean bag. I just got off the water. I tell you, it felt like the first day of fall. It's like a cold front came through. I got to wear a hoodie for the first time in months.
Was it 67 degrees out?
No, it was still in the high 70s, so, which is cold for me, you know. That's cold stuff for me. But, Guru, you've been catching some fish on the Bay of Green. What's going on there, Duder?
Yes, doing some trolling, catching some fish. How's your week been going there, Steve?
I've been on them. It's fall transition stuff, you know, and we've been pounding on that about – you start getting transitioning into fall and these colder temps and shorter days, you're going to have some fish shallow. You're going to have some fish deep, some fish on the rocks. And, you know, that's the one thing we've been hearing about. A lot of people have been pulling fish off the rocks. Me and Tyra keep screaming and screaming and screaming, get on the Roxy Rip in northern Wisconsin. But nothing too insane other than right now, you know, if you're out there early, you better be shallow. You know, with these cooler mornings and stuff like that. And then, you know, what are you seeing on that trolling bite there on Green Bay, man? What's sort of the game right now?
There's a lot of floating sandgrass, which is tough. So you have to have some weights in the front to catch that. It's just, it's been horrific sandgrass. Just basically chasing the bait schools, man.
Gotcha. Can you get through that if you put your rod tip in the water? Is it just too much of it floating around?
Oh, it's too much. It's too much. You can't get through it with the rod. It's just, it's everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
It's awful.
I ran into it today, trolling, where it's like, where weeds are starting to break apart. And it's like, you know, every 40 feet, there's something on there. It's just that early fall trolling when the weeds sort of start tearing up. You're sitting here going, this sucks. Sucks. Anyway, one of our good friends here at the app, a app user, sent me something pretty awesome this week. And so we had a question about carbonated beverages, right? If you have a fish that's bleeding from the gills, what would happen, blah, 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 blah. So there are a couple, I believe, undergrad students, which is a Michael J. Lawrence from the University of Manitoba and Jacob Brownscombe from Carleton University, did some research on this. I think there's Alexander Turan and Austin Chore. They did a controlled experiment, right, using northern pike, caught hook and line, experiment, they injured their gills in a standardized manner and treated them with Mountain Dew, Coca-Cola, or carbonated lake water, right? So they actually carbonated lake water and observed the duration, intensity of bleeding, as well overall blood loss, right? And so what happened while the fish were held, and they basically what everybody's telling you to do, dumping this crap down a fish's throat, they found that the carbonated beverages, right, there's no scientific evidence to support the use of carbonated beverages, and that essentially that this is anecdotal, this does not work. And so that even pouring that down could actually mess up the blood flow in the gills. So dumping Coke or a soda or Gatorade on a fish's gill that's bleeding is not good.
I mean, if we're pouring soda down fish's gills, might as well just start dumping gas and motor oil down there.
Here, have this can of Pepsi, boy. You know, it's just one of those things that, like, me and you were laughing on the last podcast, and I was like 5 or 6 Pepsis deep at that point, where it was like, you know, the biggest thing you should do is get them back in the water, you know, instead of it is not helping. So, you know, they were actually cutting a chunk of gills out of these northerns. Damn. They were just clipping it to see would this help or not. The fish that they did not pour this on had less blood loss.
Mm.
Leave them alone. Don't pour that crap down there, apparently, man. So that was
no sota for the fishy.
No sota. No sota. Goodness gracious. But that was cool, man. I appreciate it. Of you sending that in. That was really cool. That is just, like I said, I've always wondered, like, with that crap, where you're going, really? We're going to, I mean, I can see that people would think that it would, like, the carbonation might close the blood vessels. To me, it seems like it would open them up more so. Mm-hmm. And so it's another one of these things, you're doing more harm than good. Just chuck them back in the lake and move on. Yeah, that's about it. So, anyway, goodness, dude, I am exhausted. I've been guiding my butt off. It is finally not hotter than that I can bear out there. So we better get our butts straight to the queue and or a. Or actually, you know what? Let me ask you this, because people sort of already went there with it, and I'm rambling already. With this rock bite, me and you've been telling people for weeks the rock bite. We've gotten so many awesome emails here at the app and like success stories and stuff. Let's go over it real quick, Tyler. What are you seeing on that Northern Wisconsin rock bite? What are the tactics? You know, is it rubber? Is it blades? Sort of break some of it down, dude, because we should. I mean, we keep hammering this and people are catching fish.
So it's awesome that people are listening and being like, you know what? I'm going to go try this. And they're catching fish on rocks. I mean, that one guy caught in Minnesota caught a giant doing this. I mean,
Gondo.
That was
Gondo.
Supermondo. That thing was just a slob. That thing was massive. But so with
looked
the
like a 35
thing,
in the picture to me. I don't believe him. That was that podcast was cool, man. That fish, dude. That was such a great story. The father and son. I will say this. I don't know if because of, like, I don't know how it's going to work out with the record. And who cares? That's a kick-ass fish. That's awesome.
Fish of a lifetime, man. That's amazing.
So, anyway, break it down one more time. This only caught a 57-inch muskie for somebody. That's it. You know, not that we know what we're talking about. Break it down, guru.
Come break it down for you.
Break it down.
Break it down. Okay, so on the rock humps, we're looking for Steve. I remember we weren't able to handle those words,
banana.
So I'm gonna say it again. Yeah, there we go. You gotta look for them bananas.
I'm always looking for bananas, baby. I had a client this week. I showed him a fish on the. I showed him a fish on downscan.
Yeah.
He said bananas and just started laughing. So, anyway.
Yeah. So, we're looking for bananas on the rock humps. I'm generally looking for rock humps with real jagged rock, with a lot of crevices, cracks. Sometimes I like rock humps that have sand grass in between rock patches on the rock hump. Mm-hmm. That is like, dude, that is just the primo rock hump. I love those. So when I'm seeing the bananas over the rock humps, that's either bait fish or if it's a big enough banana, it is a big muskie, and I'm going to fish it. I will fish it. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll fish it all the way around real methodically. I will try to land a lure on every rock in every crevice. I'll spend on a rock hump the size of two minivans, I'll spend 45 minutes just hitting every single little angle.
Are these like Plymouth Voyager minivans or are these Ford Astro Stars?
Astro Stars.
Okay, gotcha. That for all you people that are really trying to dial in on how big of a rock hump is two minivans. Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah.
That was very, very, very scientific of you.
It was one minivan and a monster truck.
Listen, I'm looking for. I'd have got this one spot. It's a Dodge Durango and a Astro van.
Describe it spots now.
Describing spots using crappy cars. I cut that fish off something that looked like a 99 Camry. Definitely the contest this week is send us what horrible spot. You know, this thing was like a Ford Festiva. So anyway, not to cut you off, you're gonna finish. I do have to announce I'm mailing Howard a bait, right?
Yep.
Howard sent me the worst musky story that I cannot even read on the podcast.
Okay. I'm excited to hear it.
Okay. As a Pepsi lover, as much of a Pepsi lover I am myself, I can I know. We're gonna summarize with Pepsi, too many Pepsis the night before, right?
Okay.
He lost control of his lower unit when he set the hook on a fish, if you know what I mean. So, he goes to set on the fish and his lower unit just says, "I'm emptying." So he emptied his lower unit there in the boat down his leg. Anyway, Tyler, finish with me.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's pretty funny.
So what I do previous to Sam looking at a new rock hump, I forgot to mention this, is that I will side scan the crap out of it and kind of try to pick out individual rocks. I'll mark them, then come back and I know where the rocks are. I can make a cast at that rock that I want. So when I'm picking it apart, I am hitting every single little waypoint that I have on there, and I'm hitting every single rock methodically. And so I'm either ticking and clicking with deep diving crankbaits. You can rip rubber over these rock humps. You can even cast bucktails over the top of the rock humps, running like a foot under the surface. You will catch fish. I've caught big fish doing this season. Basically anything over these rock humps. They're there. They're hungry. They want to get fat and sassy. They'll eat whatever. You can throw a freaking birthday cake out there with hooks on it. They'll probably eat it.
I would eat it. If it was funfetti cake, I'm all over that.
Red Angel cake, man.
No, funfetti.
Yeah.
Funfetti! I said it. That is the official Musky 360 cake. That's it.
Funfetti.
Okay, it's simple. It's essentially really boring vanilla cake with rainbow sprinkles. That's what I like, okay? Period. I'm sick of arguing about it. Anyway, so let's say a guy's out there, Tyler, and he runs into something that's, say, the size of a Prius under the water. What does he do?
Well, if you've never fished it before, if you have side scanning, side scan it. If you don't have side scanning, break out a deep diving crankbait, cast along it till you start hitting stuff, and you can feel it out that way. That's the way to get around not having the electronics to do that. I fished the beginning, like 2 months of the season this year without electronics, doing exactly that and had success. But fish all the way around it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, dude, I was going to jump in there because you're sort of breaking the tangent on the electronics. And I actually said today, the dude asked me, he said, you know, what do you use your electronics for?
Yeah.
And I said, to impress clients.
That's so true.
You know, it's just like, so I don't have to pull my phone out of my pocket and see what time it is. You know, me and you were gabbing today. God, we're at Pepsi 5 right now. But it's just one of these things. If you don't have side scan, and you hear us talk about it all the time, there were plenty of muskies caught before side scan, and I've been catching fish, and I'm just saying this. I've been catching fish that I didn't see on the side scan while I was looking at the side scan. You know, it's not picking them all up, that or they're too high in the water column or blah, 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 blah. But I like what you're saying because that's old school. That's JBO. Use that deep crankbait as side scan sonar. I've done that too with like a giant killer or a 500. Just let it hit the bottom and you might get snagged, but find those rocks. I will digress and let you finish that thought out. But anyway,
I mean, what I do is I do both. I tick and click and use the side scanning and I can feel it out, build the map in my brain. And then I also can see it visually on the screen and you get a very detailed understanding of that rock hump. And sometimes what I'll do if I have a gut feeling it's good rock hump, I will go around twice with two different lures. And more often than not, on the second pass with a different lure, you will stick a fish. And I've done that. You've done that. It's pretty common.
One thing to say too is we're getting later in the year, and a lot of guys are starting to think about fall trolling. And I threw up that Joe's got sort of that master article on the late fall trolling and early fall trolling. I put that on the top of the app for you guys again. And you know, you can cover that water, but the thing is, like me and you have done it, Tyler, where starting on the outside of, let's say if it's a rock reef or even humps or boulders, mm-hmm. and like spiraling in into that rock tighter, you know, either you start really tight and you work your way out, or you work your way in. And that's another thing that a lot of people miss is, like, me and you have sat there, dude, remember that one rock hump people were like looking at us like we're idiots because we're doing donuts essentially?
We made that's stupid,
and we caught a fish too. Like, there's a guy, he's throwing a bulldog. He's like, I got on, you know, got on my mag dog, you know. And me and you were like doing donuts with two baby depth raiders. We were doing it like but we end up catching a fish. So who looks dumb now? Bulldog boy. Out there with your bulldog.
Bulldog.
Mom, they made fun of my bulldog down at the lake.
They said it was too small.
They said my bulldog's too small. Listen, it is almost bulldog 30, though. I will say that. I like my big rubber. I'm not knocking big rubber, but when they're looking at, like, when it's not okay, me and Tyra, we laugh about it all the time. Our favorite big rubber throwers are like the ones that are doing it in the worst way possible.
Oh man, I love it. Like those guys, I'll stop fishing and watch them because it's entertaining.
Like me and you saw. Remember the dude that was throwing it in like the thickest cabbage, and he would get it like a feet, and he's. I think we watched 9-10 casts in a row where it never got back to the boat for a figure eight.
Ever. It was the greatest. It was like a pound or two. It was just
like
amazing.
Throwing it into the slop, I'm going, you know, it could work.
I'm not willing to try it.
I'm not willing to try it. I really don't want to sit there and fight a pounder through the thickest grass I've seen in the longest time. But, dude, that's good stuff that, you know, another point to dial in on these rocks is casting angles. That goes back to what I was saying about doing different trolling passes, coming at that thing at different angles. The biggest thing too, and we've gotten like, what, dude, 20 emails this week about people.
So many.
Okay. The thing that a lot of people have pointed out, and maybe we haven't conveyed clearly, is this. Those rocks that have the wind blowing into them, whether it's a reef or whether they're submerged rocks or whether they're submerged humps, if the wind's blowing into them, get on those first. Those are prime. You know, and that's the stuff that's going to be the most productive. Wouldn't you agree, Tyler?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just that muskies always face the wind, too.
That's always. I have never... I'm going to say it here in the pod. I've never caught a muskie that didn't face the wind.
That was a big fart, man. I'm sitting here just like zoning the heck out.
You just threw that out there like never, ever, ever. There's not a muskie on this planet that's not facing into the wind right now, folks.
So if it's blowing out of the northeast... Every single muskie on this planet is facing the northeast.
Dude, they're like little freaking, they're like in a compass. Like they're compass needles. You can actually tell what way the wind's going.
Dude, I'm sitting here relaxing on my beanbag.
I'm just busting your beanbag because it's like, I've never seen a muskie that wasn't facing into the wind ever. Ever doesn't exist.
I love it. I wasn't even thinking about that comment.
I love it. We say stuff like that all the time. I say it on the boat, and I'm like, that won't work. And then I catch myself like, I mean, I guess it might.
Oh yeah. Or you'd be like, my dad will say something to me, be like, does this work? I'll be like, no. And then I'll think, oh wait, I caught one doing that.
Well, it could. I mean, that's the problem. We're always like, well, the level of success in musky fishing is pathetically low, you know?
Oh yeah.
So I often feel like musky fishing is like, well, a broken clock works twice a day. You know, like we stand our ground and be like, they're totally hitting 12-inch jakes. One fish a day might hit a 12-inch jake, you know.
It's true.
So I don't know. We're all a bunch of idiots. All of us do that, though. It's like, they won't hit that. They're doing this. And you go, like, four of them are. The four you move in a day, those are the ones that are doing that. The rest of them are, like, totally doing something else, and we just don't know it. So first up is Larry. What water temperature in the fall do muskies seem to start moving out to deeper water?
They're kind of always five. In deeper water. Five?
Five. What's your number?
A negative 30.
Negative Kelvin.
Kelvin.
I think the world.
There's so much ice, it's down to the sediment at 100 feet of water.
It is. Larry, there's just not a number. I think, Tyler, if you're looking at, like, some of these Cisco kind of lakes up there, that's going to be a different number than it is on something that's really tannic.
Yeah, I mean, and each lake is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, two lakes right next to each other that are both tannic could have a different number. There's no real set, and there's always fish out deep, man.
And it's the fall and the spring and the fall are the same deal. You've got to be checking everything.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be, and it's so annoying and everybody's like, I love spring fishing. I love fall fishing. You know what I like? I like winter fishing when they're all like right on one spot. You know? I like, yep. You have to be versatile. Larry, I've seen it where one day that the fish are out deep and the next morning they're in shallow. You've got to check it all. Basically, I think all of us are going, please be shallow, please be shallow, please be shallow. You know, I don't like leaving the house going, hey guys, I've got a troll deep today. That's going to be really fun. You know,
it's always awful.
You know what's exciting? Sitting there and eating a sandwich and driving
for 12 hours
a day. 12 hours a day, trying to keep conversation. Yeah. But that's the thing, is if you got to check it all, you know, it's a time of fluctuation. So one day they might be shallow, one day they might be deep, you know, they might be on the first break. You've got to be checking it all. The joys of trolling in the fall, though, is you can sort of run a spread where you got a deep bait, shallow bait, the whole bit.
Mm-hmm.
But really... And I'm just going to throw out something that I think is, and this is a super generalization, 65 and down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're looking for a solid, like, what is the number? If I'm walking out on a lake that I know was previously in the 70s, maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and it's down in the high 60s at the peak of the warmest part of the day, I will probably spend a little bit more time on that first break before I'll spend a lot of time in the shallows. But that's not often, but it's not always the case. You know, I've seen lakes where they'll like it can be 62 and they're still as tight as they can get on the edges. So for whatever that's worth, what do you think, Tyler? You got anything there?
I mean, that to me, that's right in the perfect range. It's just not. It's not exact, and muskies do whatever the heck they want.
Right. Ooh, you hear that? That was another Pepsi.
Pepsi.
Pepsi. Kyle says, half spool. What do you do when you're ready to just give up? I give up, Kyle. That's what I do.
I go home. I sell all my musky crap. I go golfing.
I just enjoy the clothing and the pageantry of golf. It's a beautiful game. I don't. And I'm going to give a follow-up on this. Kyle actually sent a follow-up like the next day or later that day. So obviously, Kyle, you were at your wit's end. If you're going, what do you do when you're ready to give up? He ended up catching a Mondo 47-incher. He didn't give up. And that's the biggest thing, dude. Of me and you talk about this. It's everybody that's really steeped in this sport. You just realize at a certain point, you go, just don't stop. The guys that catch the most muskies are the guys that are out there the most.
Yeah, I mean, you can't catch a muskie from your couch.
Buddy, I'll tell you what. If there was indoor muskie fishing, I'd be the king. Like, if we, like, imagine if we, like, bought one of those, like, water parks in the Wisconsin Dells and turned it into the world's first indoor muskie fishery. Huh?
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Like, you could just, like, sit there on the side in a chair. I hate the outdoors. I'm just going to say that. I'll be the first one. Squirrels, stupid. Deer, stupid. Trees, stupid. Birds, stupid. Don't want to be around them. Stupid.
Skunks, I like smelling them.
Chipmunks, awesome. River otters, the best. Beavers, stupid. Flowers, stupid. Eagles, double stupid. Don't want to be around them. Indoor muskie fishing. Mosquitoes suck, okay? They're awful. Biting flies, extra stupid. The outdoors are stupid. Indoor muskie fishing, that's where it's at. Just saying. Think about it.
We should create a dome over Green Bay.
There you go.
Indoor muskie fishing.
No bugs, no weather, no wind. They could put
stagnant pool.
They could put like big fans in there to create a little bit of wind. Like, I need a little wind. No more sunburns. Think about it. Yeah. I'm just saying, animals are
That'd
stupid. I don't want.
It would have its own thermostat.
Keep it 81. That's my temp. You probably keep it at 72. Because animals are stupid, Tyler. I don't like them. I don't want to be around them. People are like, they're on the boat. Oh, that bird's pretty. That bird's stupid. That's what I think of him. Don't want to see that bird. I want to be inside. I want to be inside where I have Wi-Fi and I got snacks. Somebody give me the money for the world's first indoor muskie fishery, please. Hate outside. Outside is stupid. Anyway, James says, I do not own a boat, so I do most of my muskie fishing. Sorry, I'm just laughing. I'm like the least outdoorsman. That's why it's funny, Tyler. I just don't like
it. It's true.
I like muskies. That's it. The rest of it is just like stupid. That's what the rest of it is.
Snakes.
Stupid.
Double stupid.
Name another animal, Tyler.
Dogs.
Stupid. Next.
Bears.
Stupid.
Walleye.
Oh, walleye are just like extra stupid. You know, I've never caught a walleye, pulling a walleye in that I didn't think was a stick.
Oh my God.
Listen, walleye fishing is like, guess what walleye fishing is, Tyler?
What?
Stupid. That's what walleye fishing is. Put a wet sock on the end of 9-pound test and pull it in. Because walleye are stupid. That's what it is.
Feels
like pulling in a wet sock every time. Oh, you hooked me. I give up every time. Do you know why? Because walleye are stupid. That's why. James says, I do not own a boat. Therefore, I do most of my musky fishing wading in a river. I'm trying to fish spots boats either overlook or can't get to. On occasion, when I have a really bad day, I will stop below a dam or spillway and have picked up a few muskies in doing so. Any lure suggestions in this heavy current areas below spillways or in dams that won't get pushed around as much? These are high pressure spots, seeing a lot of rubbers and gliders. Any lures that these fish may not be seeing that will work often? Meow back at you, Kemosabe. below spillways and dams. Oh, I mean, one thing that I like to do in that situation is a good old-fashioned slop master and just let it drop and work the lower end of things. You know, bounce it off the rocks that are below a spillway. If they're seeing a lot of bucktails and rubber, me and you, Tyler, I think the biggest heavy current thing that we do is a jointed DR with a bell sinker on it.
Yeah, it keeps it in the current, in that spot longer.
Keeps it in there. That's one thing. Current is a different ball game. And if you've never fished current, and I'm not talking lazy river, I'm talking current, it's tough because your baits will end up running sideways and running kooky and all this stuff. I'm trying to think of like some just off the rip things that they probably aren't seeing in a heavy pressure. Like heavy pressure and current is a different animal where I'm going to be thinking low and slow. I'm going to be thinking things that can grind down a little bit deeper. One thing me and you, Tyler, have played with is jigs.
Yep.
And I'm just talking weighted jigs. We got some secrets coming out in the future that we can't share all the details, but jig heads, grubs, skirts, and just bang them off the bottom is something you can try.
They ain't seen that.
They ain't seen that, boys. No, sir. Ain't seen that. Stupid. another thing I like in heavy current are Poseidons with blades in the front. And so like a dozer, like a couple dozer nines or dozer tens, if your current's not too crazy, on front of a Poseidon is cool. It can be any swim bait, you know, any rubber chunk out there with some blades will work. Let me think, dude. I'll say this, like these Bondi, weird Bondies, like the Royal I can't even say it. Royal Orba.
Orba? The Orba?
Orba. Orba.
Orb.
Redenbacher.
It's the weird one. It's the weird one.
Roy Orbison.
It looks like an alien.
It does. That's a cool bait. You know, it's got some funky stuff going on there, which is like a rubber alternative. I'm just thinking of things that will get down in the water column.
A brick with hooks.
That, listen, if somebody can show me a cast to catch video of you catching a muskie on a brick with hooks, I'm all over it.
Dude, that would be amazing.
If they're mad enough, that's the thing. The ones that are mad and they're fired up, they'll hit about anything. I'm trying to think of some other tricks in heavy current below spillways that have worked for me. Jigs are one thing. And just like actually just jigging them, banging the rocks with big musky sized jigs. Wait in front of your crankbaits. That will work. And also, too, is fishing. If I'm trying to get near the spillway and throwing down from it and working up with crankbaits that are, so the current's working with you to drive the baits deeper. And that's one thing. Like blades work way better across the current. But if you're throwing downstream and reeling up to yourself will work. The other trick that I've seen, and this is old school, this is like some crap you'd see, and this is no joke, I could dig it up. I saw a thing of a dude like, how to fish a planer board from the bank.
Wow,
not kidding, dude. There's some old guy out there listening to this going, he's right, I've seen it. I've seen him do it. Old school way of doing things would be like, put a spoon behind a planer board and let it out from the bank.
I mean, with the moving current, it's basically essentially you're basically like in a boat.
Yeah.
You're moving, but I've from the bank.
Uh-huh. You can fish planers in rivers from the bank.
I love it.
I've seen it happen one time. I'm talking some, this is some West Virginia hillbilly stuff, boys. I might have to edit in the banjos there. Hold on. Give me a little jug music. So, anyway, I saw a dude doing it with a spoon and caught a muskie. He put a planer board out like 10 feet behind it was a spoon. And he would like set the planer board in holes and eddies and the bait's just sitting there wiggling in a hole, man.
I mean, those muskies that are sitting in that hole, normal baits don't get to them. Yeah. Like that one.
So if you want some like wicked weird, like they haven't seen it, that's, I would be thinking crankbaits behind a planer board or a spoon behind a planer board or just a big grub and a hook, because everybody that's fishing in current, they have a problem where they got to keep moving. You can hang baits in places from the bank with a planer board. Yes, it's ridiculous. Yes, they used to do it. I've never seen anybody do it in years since, but off the top of my head, I'm thinking about the weirdest things to do in current, and that's about takes a cake.
That's amazing.
It is, isn't it? It's silly. Next up is Karen. She says, not like talk to the manager kind of Karen. May I speak to your musky manager, please?
It's amazing.
Say it's amazing again, Tyler.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
I just want you to tell me, am I amazing stupid?
You're stupid. Anyway, hey, say another animal, Tyler.
Sheep.
Stupid. What else you got?
Raccoon.
Raccoons are actually badass. We all know that. We can all agree here on the podcast that Raikens, that's how you pronounce that, by the way. Raikens.
Raikens.
Bubbles.
And deerts.
Deerts. You boys seen them deerts? you're truly the bubbles of the podcast, Tyler. Anyway.
Can't catch the muskies.
We got them deerts running around. Deer are stupid. Okay. Ask me one more animal, Tower. Ask me what I think.
It's going to be stupid. Muskrat.
Oh, those are extra stupid. Anyway, Karen says, I want to speak to your manager. Loving the podcast. Karen's question is, may I speak to your manager? She says, should I give up on topwater because of the low hookup ratio when musky fishing? No.
No, 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 no.
It is not. Okay. I'm get the soapbox out, folks. The thing for me is hookup on topwater is not low percentage if you're focused and doing it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like with figure eights. What does everybody do when they have their first figure eight? They sort of freak out. Oh, there's fish there. On top. Oh, there's a muskie. Muskies are stupid. Anyway, so they see this fish coming in on top water the first time, and people sort of freak out, and you anticipate the strike because you can see them about to grab it, and a lot of times people botch it because of that. I've been known to close my eyes. Once I know he's there, I close my eyes a lot of times. That sort of helped me because the second you see him go at it, you see it's like you're so intense at that point, you'll set the hook. So if I think that fish is about to go for it, I'll shut my eyes and just wait to feel the weight.
You know? I like that.
Yeah. It's not the coolest thing to do. I'm just being honest. People are going, oh, oh. I mean, I'm not going to sit and go, I'm so badass, boys, I get every one of them. Now I realized, hey, I'm freaked out by them when I see a dorsal fin coming out of the water, and I usually blow the hook up. So I just go, cool, the fish is there, shut my eyes and keep reeling.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a low hookup percentage on top water, one, you're getting too nervous and you're setting the hook too early, or if you're setting the hook right, you're not setting it good enough. I mean, when I'm fishing top waters, say like a top raider, whatever, tail prop style kind of bait, I always set the hook down. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Steve, but I always will set it
down
instead of up.
Down into the side, yeah.
Yeah, down into the side. It's just if you're setting a hook up, you're not getting quite a good hook up, and it's going to be all messed up from there. I mean, they don't call me top raider Tyler for nothing. I mean,
what's your hookup ratio there at college, Tyler?
I can't disclose that. My parents are listening.
They can't disclose that. But it's low, folks. It's low. Anyway, or something.
In the negative.
In the negative. Lost three this year, boys. Anyway. Oh, man. Karen said, if you don't answer this question, I'll report you to your corporate manager. So she's going to ask, too. She says, where can I find help on how a lure should be used. For example, how to best work a shallow rater, phantoms, suix, slot masters, shadzillas, plastic, etc. I own so many lures, but I'm not sure I'm reeling them in correctly. Well, thanks for asking. There's a really basic section on the app called 101. And if you go to the top, there's three different things. And you can go over to musky lures. And that's at least a basic on what to use them for. What I recommend, if you really want to get into each lure, is watch a video, right? So, like, there's tons of stuff on people fishing Poseidons. Well, a Poseidon and a Shadzilla, close enough, right? Okay, we can argue back and forth, but they're both big swim baits. You know, if I wanted to work a shallow rater, I'm sure as heck I'm going to watch a Joe Bucher video of him working a shallow rater. That's the way I've learned a lot of my tricks, is watching people and how they get a trigger out of a fish. That would be the best way to do it, and study the cadence of the retrieve. How fast are they reeling? How many times are they twitching? And how are they breaking it down? That's the best way to do it. We've got some stuff coming out this winter once we have more time to film it, of sort of like actual tutorials for all these baits, so they'll be on the app here soon. But that's what we've done. Tyler, is you've done it as well, where you just emulate.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've stood in the back of the boat and instead of fishing, just watched Bucher. Just
right.
I'm just going to watch him work that bait, and then I'm going to mimic everything he does.
And that's the thing, is you don't have to be on the boat with these people. You can watch a video and go,
yeah,
what are they doing? And yep. And watch that. Let's say there's a 10-second clip before they hook a fish. Watch that retrieve before that. Watch the cast they made that they didn't catch a fish, and then watch the one where they caught a fish. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to that. Aside from that, a lot of the stuff is going to be trial and error on your body of water. You know, I've got a pretty good, if I don't say so myself, pretty good article on suix. They're on the 101 section there. You know, that's one of my favorite baits there. Slop masters, you know, it's each bait sort of has its own running depth and what it's supposed to do. What the big thing that everybody does in a negative way is they run all these baits fast and in the top few feet of the water column.
Gotta burn them in, boys.
Burn them in, boys. I swear to God, if that bait even gets wet, that's the... Like, you know, I've seen people throw Medusas and they look like they're water skiers coming across the surface. Like, why throw a big rubber bait if it doesn't get down anywhere? That's mm-hmm. the one thing I'll tell beginning anglers and anglers that are working with these baits is go, bucktails are meant to be reeled in at a litany of different speeds. Right? You can reel in a slot master really slow. You can reel it in really fast. You can reel in a shallow rater really slow or really fast. Utilize baits for where they are best fit in the water column. If it is in the top 3 feet of the water column and fish are hitting there, it's going to be a shallower or bucktail for me most days. You know, don't use a good bait in the wrong place. And that's the biggest thing I think to figure out is from the retrieves of, like, what are these baits capable of doing and what can they do? What fish can they catch in different parts of the water column? Tyler, take over. What else would you say about learning how to use different baits?
I mean, don't try to screw in a flathead screw with a Phillips screwdriver. I mean, wrong wow. tool for the wrong thing. Subpar explanation there.
Wrong tool for the wrong.
I'm all philosophical and fancy.
You know what they say, don't use a flathead in a Phillips, boys. What shop did you work at, Tyler? I can tell you've been around. Heck of a craftsman, folks.
I'm crap. I'm stupid.
Ask me about Tyler Andrews.
Tyler Andrews.
Stupid. Anyway, Kevin from Green Bay says, love the podcast. He said, I had every intention of submitting a rap during your contest until my wife found the
Oh, God.
Had every intention of submitting a rap during your contest until my wife found the sheet of paper with my lyrics on it. Apparently, it was hilarious to someone who's not a musky fisherman or an app listener. I'm super embarrassed to ever hear the end of this. Clap, Tyler. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Kevin from Green Bay. That had, like, hopefully his wife was like, please don't tell me he's trying to be, like, the Slim Shady of musky fishing.
I want to hear it badly.
Send it, Kevin. Send us your lyric sheet. Maybe your wife's wrong. Maybe you can quit your job and be a musky rapper. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, you could tour the Northwoods exclusively. Like, you could, like, do a show in Minocqua, and you could do one in Eagle River.
You could rap out of the big, giant muskie in Minocqua, or whatever the heck that thing is.
There you go. Think about
it. Just rap out of its mouth, man.
Just
be awesome.
The crowds are loving it. Mom's spaghetti.
Gold chains, everything.
You know. That's embarrassing. Can you imagine? That's like if your wife is like, what the hell is this? Are you serious? Kevin. Let's act it out real quick, Tyler. I'll be Kevin's wife. You begin. Dear, what is this?
That's my rap song.
For what? What are you writing raps? What is this trash? It just says spaghetti Poseidon on it. What is this?
It's for the Musky 360 guys. I gotta be cool, you know. You feel me?
Pathetic. I'm leaving you. I'm taking the kids, Kevin. This is over. I never loved you.
Oh, my God.
Kevin.
I want to hear it badly.
We want to hear it. Kevin, my wife has found weird things. Trust me, I'm as weird as they come. And it's just like, I'll scribble something down. She's like, what is this? What's wrong with you? Okay. Anyway, what if it was like some weird musky manifesto and wasn't even like a rap?
I want to read it.
I want to read it. Kevin, we want your lyric sheet. We also want to interview your wife for the podcast because it'd be really funny. Anyway, Ohio Brian says, can you guys break down fishing rocky primary and secondary points? I'm looking for tips on what time of season to focus on them and how to attack them in those seasons. Says, great podcast. You guys are killing it. Thank you. Donka Shane.
Donka Shane.
Donka Shane.
We covered quite a bit about rocks earlier in the podcast.
We did.
And rocks are good all year round.
Here's the thing. His name's Ohio Brian. A little bit different there on some of this rocky point stuff, though, however.
Mm-hmm.
That's Brian. That's the last guy's lyrics. That's it. That's my stutter is his lyrics. Kevin's like, what muskies are dumb. Yeah. Cheese curds, shad wraps. that's as far as he got. What do you think? Is that how far he got? Nothing
farther than I got.
Nothing rhymes with Booker.
I could run something with Booker, but he'd probably shoot me.
Duker? Cooker, nuker,
slow pooper.
That's the inside joke. Anyway. There's what else? Husky. You got husky. You got musky. Thrusky. Thrusky's not even a word. Busky. I don't know. Kevin, please send your rap. Okay, please. Anyway, so he's talking about these secondary points. When you get on some of these points that are coming off like an obvious shoreline point, you sometimes have little dog legs and the necks break down, and it'll end up being like secondary points to me that I'm looking at are like the main point, and I'm trying to conceptualize or at least convey on a map how they look to me. As you'll see the main point, as I call it, all the little squigglies, right, all your structure, and you will see the necks breaks down from that. That is some stuff I'm really going to pay attention to, right? So you'll have, like, the tight squiggles and then widening squiggles. right? A lot of times on a secondary point or another point that's coming off that, people are going to have their boat where the fish are.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is with a point, if I can, if the wind's working with me, because we all know muskies always face into the wind. There's never been a muskie not facing into the wind. So if the wind's coming in my face, if it's coming at me, I will actually cast to that deeper stuff first and then work my way in and then drift my way out on secondary points. It's just one of those deals that's very bassy. I know I had an article. I can't remember what article it was where I talked about secondary points. But it's one of those things I've really delved into that is a day saver for me. And what I'm going to look for on the secondary section of that point is maybe it's not the main rocks, but it might be that next little break line. Like there's one break line between that point and deep water, right? It's a transition. It's a holding zone. It's an in-between. And that's probably the most overlooked section of any kind of bar or reef or any rocky point. You know, there's not a lot of reef bite in Ohio that I can even remember. But when we look at any kind of secondary line, any kind of secondary break, what's between you and that point is often more important. Tyler, I'm tired. I'm obviously four muskies to the wind at this point. But what's the most important to the point is get to the point would be don't focus all your attention on that point. Don't you know the Tyler, they say the old saying, I say it to you all the time about don't step over dollars to pick up dimes.
Yep.
Don't drive past good structure to get to other structure you think is good. That is sort of my biggest takeaway for secondary points. Is don't just like steam in and go, I'm hitting the main point and I'm out of here. Fish in to it, fish out of it, fish around it. Check those outside edges of a point. It's just like checking the outer perimeters of a weed bed or a weed edge. Wow. Oh my goodness, I'm scrolling. There's 4 trillion more questions here, Tyler.
Good Lord, have mercy.
Have mercy. Worst podcast ever. Anyway.
It's always a trash pile with us.
Would you, Tyler, since I have the questions pulled up, would you like to guess what the next question is?
What color?
Uh-huh.
What color socks is the guru wearing? And it's a trick question because I'm not wearing socks.
Oh, my goodness. For all you
people. I'm wearing slippers.
He's sitting in a beanbag. He's wearing slippers, folks. That's as good as it gets.
It's very attractive.
And you wonder why you're banned from the muskie shop.
Yeah. I sneak in there every once in a while like a roach.
If you haven't seen the video, Tyler is actually banned from the muskie shop.
I get chased quite often out of there.
He gets chased out.
I don't go in there to buy lures. I just rub them on my skin.
He just basically takes brand new lures and rubs them on himself. It's disgusting. Anyway, Sean says, I'm curious on my line weight. I'm curious on what line weight to use all the way around. I love burning bucktails and jerk baits. I don't want to use any more line than what's needed. I'm currently using 100-pound master braid and really feel it's overkill. I mean, it's overkill.
The gold standard, I guess, is just 80.
Yeah.
80. That's it. 80.
You're at overkill. It depends on running depth. 80 will get it. I don't think the fish care.
They don't give a darn.
If it's got 7-0s hanging off of it, it doesn't matter. I you're overkilling it. Here's the deal with that 100-pound braid. You're going to lose some distance on your cast because of line diameter and drag in the water. 80 is the gold standard, which is overkill, period. You can catch any muskie there is on 40-pound braid, 30-pound braid. it's more about breaking lures off and banging into stuff. You know, so 80 pounds seems to be the industry standard. Yes, it's overkill, but 80 pounds overkill. If you like throwing a 100-pound Cortland Master Braid, throw it. Whatever. It'll affect your running depth. On a cast, it'll actually, a 100-pound braid will actually affect running depths. If you throw, say, like a, you know, a depth raider or shallow raider or a crane bait, it actually will affect that running depth. So that would be the one thing I would go get away from, because pretty much any modern musky bait was designed around 80-pound braid for running depths. Now, if you're cool with where your baits are running, that won't make that much of a difference, because 100-pound braid's slightly bigger surface area. Cortland Master braids tends to pick up water throughout the day, by the way. That's why I'm a Beast Braid guy, Suffix 832 if I got a Power Pro, if that's all they got, kind of deal. So those tend to be less absorbent. The Cortland I've gotten away from just because it seems to absorb more water. So if you've got a 100-pound braid, you sort of got to have a little bit of water weight in that thing. It is overkill, but you're only up one size, really, because it goes from 80 to 100. So, Tyler, do you throw any 100?
I don't think I ever have.
I throw, the only time I throw 100 is when I'm throwing them infernal boo dogs. When it comes, when it becomes bulldog season, I break out that 100-pound.
I mean, if there is a guy out there that wants to try my brick idea, 100, maybe 150.
Brick dog. Dude, I guarantee you put a blade on the back of a brick, you could catch a muskie.
Yeah. I mean, if they're jacked up and all pissed off. And
I tell people all the time, they'll be like, what are they hitting today? I said, well, the mad ones will hit your shoe if you put a hook on it. I said, the rest of them were trying to coax into doing something they don't feel like doing. You know, I've seen it so often where you go, all right, we've been here 7 minutes. I got a guy in the boat that couldn't musky fish. You put a gun to his head and he catches one. It wasn't from skill. It's because there's a fish that was pissed off and ready to eat. You know, he could have put out a piece of thick cut bacon out there and they would have hit it. Oh, bacon. You know,
get a bacon.
Stupid. Anyway, you know, it's just one of those things of they'll hit anything when they're pissed. So that's why I throw a Alabama rig with three bulldogs. That's the truth. Cool. We're laughing because the inside joke is Tyler has seen, there was a dude on Lake of the Woods. Chaz has seen him too.
It's the same guy dude every year. It's amazing.
Do you know what's better than one bulldog, Tyler?
Three
bulldogs.
All at once.
93 pounds of lures, basically. That's it.
I don't know
boys.
How you cast that, man.
I don't know. I'm going to break out my 200-pound test. Got me a St. Croix 12'9" extra.
Maybe Castmaster, your client there, should hook up with that guy.
You're going way back on the podcast. Yes, Castmaster that had the 12-foot custom musky rod that he couldn't even figure eight. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. That literally, dude, I could deliver a bait to your front door right now from Tennessee to Green Bay. That thing was cast. I'll tell you that much.
It's amazing.
It would launch a bucktail from here to the next lake over. But boy, if you're in anything less than 15 feet of water, you ain't figure eighting that thing. Anyway, Dan says, I know summertime cold fronts typically ain't good for musky fishing. But now that fall transition is here, when does a cold front become a good thing in musky fishing? I don't know. Jesus. I don't know. It does. It's just what he's asking is a really good question, which is I've seen it where a cold front will turn things on. It's all about what's around it. Like a fall time or a winter time cold front can be awesome if it was sort of warm ahead of it. You know what I'm saying? It can't be like
a sharp transition.
A sharp transition. I mean, I've seen it so many times where you get into the late fall, and if these fish, and I'm just imagining, I'm just like totally putting thoughts in their head, they're going, oh crap, the ice is coming. They go ballistic.
Mm-hmm.
It is really a day by day, lake by lake kind of ordeal. I don't think there's a clear cut and dry answer on that question. It's a great question. It's something that I think once we get into the fall, cold fronts become less of a bad word. I don't think of a cold front as like the kiss of death like I do if it's in July. Where, okay, wow, a 75 degree surface temp and now it's just like falling like a rock. That's bad. I have seen muskies make stupendous moves shallow and really put on the feed bag when we've had 10, 15 degree temperature drops with a cold front in the fall and the winter. I think it depends on what that cold front was bookend with. You know, if it was like a high warm front and like warmer than it should have been, and then it was drastic, I don't know. But if it's like sort of steady eddy, and then like we get that, because a cold front in the winter and the fall can become biological pressure.
Forces them to put on the feed bag early.
Right. And I think it's going to be a lake to lake, a region to region kind of thing. I mean, I bet you've seen it, Tyler. You called me last year and ran into that where you went, man, we just got a cold front and just slaughtered them.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, I remember, if correct me if I'm wrong, it wasn't like you had a warm front followed by a cold front. It was just like typical weather, you know, sort of that cruddy fall.
You walk out and go, ooh, got cold last night. It was cold.
Got cold. Better put on my Musky Shop hoodie from themuskyshop.com. Better put on my hoodie. By the way, I will say this. I will not take off that one hoodie, dude. They have this. I'm just going to tell you.
I got the same one. It's amazing.
They got this fleece-lined hoodie. It's the best thing I've ever worn. It's my favorite hoodie. I'm actually wearing it now. But anyway, that's the deal, is like there can be what in the summer would be negative becomes a positive in the fall and in the winter. And it's just like some cold fronts are worse than others in the summer. Some cold fronts are better than others in the fall and winter. And it's just hard to gauge. It's a great question. I just think it's going to be regional. Jim says, I've recently read Joe Booker's Bible, Crankbait Secrets. He said he's read it 3 times in the last 2 weeks. And he's
that's amazing.
Yeah, that's. But that's where, like, we're talking cranks. I don't care if you own a Joe Booker lure. Don't care. If you are a crankbait fisherman, that's where you need to be looking. He says he's particularly interested in the night fishing chapter. His question is, when night fishing, is it still important and effective to figure eight? Love the Pat. Love the app and all the podcasts.
Yes.
Tyler, here's the
yes,
thing.
Yes, it is.
Here's the thing. We appreciate the meowing. It's become a thing now. It's like every question we got to meow. I feel degraded, don't you?
I feel just defiled.
Do you feel dirty?
I feel a little bit dirty.
Me too. I feel a little dirty.
Just a tad bit.
Tad.
It's becoming a thing. Every podcast, I got to mispronounce.
My name's Taj Martin. That's what I'm naming my kid. Instead of Chaz, I'm naming him Taj.
Taj.
Wow, listen. Spring for something over 4 letters if you're going to name a kid something. Anyway, night fishing, figure eights. I'm tapping the desk. Tell this man what to do. Tyler, Guru, Andrews, go.
You must always figure eight, man. Always.
Always. Especially always. At night, but expand.
At night, I mean, you can't tell if there's a muskie following, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't do you any good not to figure eight, because you're just missing chances. So, I mean, figure eights at night are a must, but you need to modify your figure eights from daytime figure eights. Yep. Meaning you want bigger, wider, more pronounced figure eights. Maybe just do a gigantic freaking oval, a real big one.
Yeah.
And press the button on your reel and engage, like, don't engage the spool. You know what I mean? Thumb it. So when that, if there's a fish behind it and it grabs it, it won't scare the living daylights out of you.
Yeah.
And you'll be able to keep them hooked, because that, if a fish bites in the pitch black darkness, there's no light, you will be scared shitless.
You'll lose your shit right there in the boat, boys. And you don't want to do that.
Oh, it's the most terrifying thing ever, especially when it's a giant. Oh my gosh, it's terrifying.
Yeah, that's the thing is in, you'll see people do things like they'll add glow beads. They'll add like these little glow beads to the leaders so they know when it's coming in. I use a swivel or a tuner ring or whatever that's too big to go through the tip of my rod. And that's what I use to know that it's right there. And once that hits, that's when I go into my oval. That's a little trick. We've talked about in the podcast, which is at night, big and slow. That's what you want to be throwing. Big baits, slow baits, 9-inch Shellerators, 10-inch Believers, 12-inch Jakes, 10-inch Jakes, shallow Mag Dogs, big 10s. You know, if they're hitting 8s during the daytime, put a 10 on. You know, don't worry about size at night as much, because it's about vibration. A lot of this is about them finding the bait. I don't feel that nighttime baits need to be that subtle.
No, you want big, loud, and you want it to scream, "Hey, I'm over here. Why don't you just come over and eat me? Eat me. I look delicious.
I'm tasty." Anyway, so, you know, jointed shallow raiders. That's about as small as I'll go. Really slow cranking DRs. I'm trying to think. You know, I'm sitting here looking at a bunch of baits. I like, it's stupid, it's a really inexpensive bait, are the Storm jointed flat sticks.
Mm-hmm.
They're really loud. They're like clack, clack, clack. That's a good bait. Shallow Invader. That's a good nighttime bait. And then the topwater. You know, but anything that you have some speed control, we're thinking shallow, we're thinking slow, and we're thinking big vibration. That's the biggest tips I can give there. Anyway, Todd says, "I'm a part-time muskie angler. I have a week of muskie fishing coming up at the end of September on Park Rapids in Minnesota. What type of structure do the fish typically use this time of year? I understand that water temps will affect fish locations, how they use structures. Meow, as always. Love the podcast. Find it entertaining and helpful."
Meow. That's a depressed cat because I've had to meow so much.
It's sad and patronizing. Meow. I feel like the hostess at Hooters that's been there 6 years.
just beaten to death.
Welcome to Hooters. Give it a look. All right. How many in your party?
Great.
I know why you're here. All right, get it over with. Moving on. I know, and I don't know that exact body of water in Minnesota. I know you can definitely have a rock bite. Hello, rock bite.
Rocky.
If you Rocky haven't Bell figured Ball. It out, if you're still beating the weed edge, we've been screaming rocks. A podcast listener basically caught a 57 doing what we were talking about. Hello? Anybody home?
Meow.
Meow.
Knock, knock, knock.
You got to go to the hard bottom, man. Rocky.
Tyler Andrews loves a hard bottom on this Musky 360 podcast.
I
like it bony. Give me that hard bottom. Word on the street, like, you like them soft and muddy. Anyway, you're going to go and look for rocks. You're going to check that out, and you're going to throw a little bit of everything in that. I know, too, you can get into these sand bites in Minnesota. you can get in some like shorelines that is not weed. There's not a lot of anything else going on there. That's what I'd look at. As far as that structure, look at, obviously, outside weed edges, inside weed edges. That's obvious. My big focus would be on that rock bite. And then if that's not clicking there, go look for these flat shorelines, anything that's just clear that has a little bit of a thermal advantage. You know, as things cool off, sometimes these fish will tuck up in the warmest water they can find. What do you think, Tyler?
Me likey.
Me likey. And next up is Logan. This question is for Steven or anyone filmier. Filmier. I can't fall.
What?
Me filmier. I said familiar, but I'm like sitting here slurring already. He says, anyone familiar with southern reservoir fishing? My dad and I are going to fish Green River Lake in Kentucky next weekend. We are wondering what you would recommend. We look for what structure should we look for? What should we throw? What should we do this time of year? Is trolling viable?
Have at it, Southern man.
A Southern man. Hold on. Let me go hit my wife first. that's what we do down here. Drink Pepsis and hit our wives. Anyway. Well, here's the deal. That area, Green River and that stuff, bucktails are definitely still viable. Fish are still going to be up shallow. Check on the flats. Check your vegetation. Slow down from how fast you think it should be going. It's been summer here since April. You know what I'm saying? So they're sort of burnout on summer. So slow your presentations. Eights and tens will work. And if that's not clicking for you, get suspended over deep pockets, deep holes. That's all you need to know. You know, that's going to do a lot for you. You've got a lot of like panfish, a lot of shad and stuff that are up shallow. Find the shallow areas, work them with those blades, working with shallow raiders as a good bait to be looking at too. But slow your presentations down in general is going to be the best advice I can give you. And this dude, again, it's okay. This guy's name is A-N-D-Z-E-J. Actually, did he ask this last week about what exactly is the moon phase and how does it relate to musky fishing?
I think, yeah, we answered that.
We did. Last week. We answered that last week. All right. We appreciate
you. Pay attention.
Pay attention. Gah.
Gah, darn it.
Folks, this is the stuff you tune in for right here. This is the big league stuff, big league tips. We got the hottest tips and the hottest tricks. Tips and tricks, Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
Tips.
And tricks.
And tricks. Tricks.
And tips.
And tips. Listen, for the low, low price of $99.99 a month, you too can listen to the Muskie 360 podcast.
One, there'd be two people listening to that, paying for that subscription. Listen, both our moms.
My mom wouldn't listen to this bullshit. She knows more than I do. She'd be like, that's not how you catch a muskie. This guy's a fool. Listen, this is the part of the show where me and Tower talk to you about our pyramid scheme. If you want to be a baby, we're looking for muskie ambassadors in your state or town. Insert your state or town. For $99.99 a month, you can be a Muskie 360 podcast ambassador. All you have to do is get 400 more people to sign up for $99.99 a month.
And just give us money.
And just give us money so we can buy more Muskie baits and Pepsi. People are starving in northern Wisconsin.
I think you have your states mixed up.
No. We're gonna do like, you know that Sarah McLachlan crap on the commercials and stuff, and they're like doing the real sad cats and dogs.
Oh yeah, it kills me every time.
We're gonna do that with just sad fat people from Wisconsin. Musky anglers are struggling all over Wisconsin. It's just a fat guy in a tuffy. Missing a hook set. For the low price of $19.99 a month, you can sponsor a northern Wisconsin muskie angler.
Oh my gosh.
You know? Operators are standing by. Operators are standing by. Tyler, I'm tired. I've obviously had too many Pepsis.
Always.
I think it's time to call it a day. Folks, actually, no, it's not. God, I'm just rambling because I really don't give a rat's ass. What's the contest, Tyler? If you want to win a bait.
Okay.
You've listened this long.
And we have a contest for you.
The contest is?
Could it be that you have to come up with your own contest and submit it, and whoever has the best contest will win the contest for next week?
For $99.99 a month, you can submit contests to the most.
We're having a contest about a contest.
It's a contest contest. This is the dumbest contest ever. So, you will win an illustrious, guaranteed to catch a 50, Junior's inline. If you send us your best contest for this contest. So this contest is you submit a contest, and that's the contest to win this contest. Would that be correct, Tyler?
Yeah, that is the correct context for this contest.
Context of this contest is the context would be the contest is a contest. Keep the context correct. Context.
Yes, you are correct about the contest.
You are.
Basically, I'm just super lazy.
So, this is the worst idea ever, and I love it. You send us the next contest for the next podcast. We will say you're the winner of this contest, and then we will use your contest for the next contest on the podcast.
I love it.
Anyway, the other thing I'd say, a little housekeeping here, is we have talked about the Muskie 360 road trip. We have talked about that. Me and Tyler have wanted to do it. As you can see, the world is a little crazy right now with stupid stuff.
So, it's on fire.
Like, some places are on fire. I saw a chimpanzee at Taco Bell kill a man.
Okay? I mean, that's pretty normal for the South.
There's literally a tiger on the loose in Knoxville. Do you know that?
I know. It's awesome.
That's no joke.
It's crazy.
So there's a tiger on the loose. Literally this week, this is no joke. There is a kangaroo running loose in East Tennessee. There's a tiger on the loose in East Tennessee. This is not bullshit. Google it. A bear ate a man 4 minutes from my house. Dude's camping, and a bear just ate his ass. 4 minutes from my house. Not like down the street, around the corner. No. 4 minutes from my house, a bear was like, yo, dude, you look good. I'm going to eat the shit out of you. So he ate him. Tigers, mind you, tigers on the loose. Kangaroos on the loose. We're hoping that the tiger will eat the kangaroo, which will turn two problems into one. And then a dude ran out of gas in his airplane and landed on the highway. That's what it's like here in the Bermuda. Literally, this place is the Bermuda Triangle for hillbillies.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. Listen, it's like deliverance. It's scary. If there weren't fish here, I would leave. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, folks, we're going to sign off. Send us your best contest for the contest. Great idea, Tyler. That was stupid. Later.